Welcome to the Coffee Break. I'm here as usual with my buddy, Tom.
What's up, hey, Tom? Hey guys, Alan, how's it going? Good to be here.
How was the past week for you?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good, man.
Did you look outside?
Yeah.
It seems like the end of the world is coming.
Pouring rain.
Ned Stark was right. Winter has finally arrived.
Winter has arrived.
Winter has arrived. Israel is drowning, if you guys don't know. Israel is slowly disappears into the sea. Crazy amounts of rain, and as a third world country, we can't really deal with it.
Yeah, right? our infrastructure is not really built for that amount of water at one time.
Yeah, it's collapsing. People are drowning. Yesterday, I heard a kindergarten kids had to be rescued through like rubber boats.
Really?
They were stuck inside.
What?
They couldn't leave the building, like the kindergarten building, the kids, because there was too much water around them. So they had to bring like the fire department or something, or the police had to bring like rubber boats to take them out.
That's crazy, man.
That's insane. It's insane.
They could have just like thrown them snorkels and like, okay, kids, each for their own, you know?
Yeah, man, fucking kids. Imagine like you couldn't leave your house because it was a river outside. Yesterday it was the street. Now it's like a river.
Yeah, I guess that's what people in like, you know, in cold countries like Canada or Norway feel when it's like snows a lot and then they just can't.
They have the infrastructure for it. They're prepared, right?
Yeah.
We're not prepared. It's like you go to Paris or something in the summer and it's like 40 degrees, and they don't have like they have to jump into the fountain to get cold because they don't
like
have
elephants in Africa. Yeah, they don't know what to do.
Well, that was semi-racist.
That's so elephantist.
Hanukkah this week.
Yeah. Great holiday, man.
Happy holiday.
I've been eating sufganiyot for like a crazy mofo.
Yeah. I've noticed that girls like to talk about how much that to clarify, sufganiyot is like a donut.
It's like a donut with jelly.
Jam.
Yeah, with like strawberry jam. Doesn't have to be. Like there are other types.
Yeah, there's the crazy types, right?
Yeah,
there's some of the crazy types. Girls love to talk about how many donuts they ate.
Or how many donuts they didn't
eat. Exactly. It's always like, it's either like, oh my God, I ate so many donuts, I'm so fat. Or like, oh my God, I didn't eat any donuts this year, I'm amazing.
I had nothing at all to eat today. Just an apple and a shawarma and a tray of donuts.
But with the Diet Coke?
That's actually, I have to be honest, that's from a stand-up show that I saw. It's not my joke.
Damn.
Yeah.
Lighting the candles. Do you light candles at your house?
Yeah.
Every day?
Not in our house, but we go to other people that light candles. We don't actually have a Chanukiah.
Don't have one?
No. No. Bad Jew. Very bad Jew.
Bad Jew. Yeah. Very bad Jew.
Very bad Jew.
In the news this week, Israel uncovered a few
tunnels, right?
I know about one.
Okay.
But we woke up this week. I think it was it Tuesday or one of the days midweek. This midweek, we woke up into a big announcement by the military that there's a special
operation Northern Shield.
Yeah, operation.
sounds big, right?
Sounds too big. That's the problem.
Yeah, considering what they actually did, it sounds a bit too big. Like from what I understood, they literally just opened. Okay, so Hezbollah, the terrorist organization in Lebanon, they dig tunnels from Lebanon into Israel.
Yeah.
So from what I understood, the army just discovered where the tunnels are and then filled them with concrete until the border. Like they didn't even go into the Lebanese side.
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't sound like much of an operation to me, you know? I mean,
well, that's the people people are really asking questions because you wake up one morning into a big operation, which after a few people think war, people think invading Lebanon, people think all sorts of things.
Yeah.
When in reality, it's basically nothing.
It's
construction work.
Yeah.
Exactly. It doesn't
filling
have anything
concrete
to do
in tunnels. I mean, clearly, like I don't think there's an Israeli that's like, oh no, we shouldn't have done that. Like, yeah, we should stop the tunnels, but there's no reason to make such a big announcement on
it. That's the way they present it is strange.
All right. But speaking of tunnels, I have a surprise for you.
Yeah.
I didn't dig a tunnel underneath your house, but I had yesterday, there was a patient in the hospital where I study from Gaza, from Sajaiya.
Voila.
Yeah.
And
okay. Well, no, we treated him. He was fine. They suspected he has some autoimmune disease or something like that.
Damn.
And then they suspected that he might have something else or not sure or the, so they send him to the department where I was doing the rotation at. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we inspected him. I talked to him a bit. Good guy. He doesn't speak Hebrew at all, so we needed like a translator. But
they speak English?
No, not really.
Arabic, just Arabic.
Yeah, Arabic. And then
why did he bring him all the way to Jerusalem?
I just think Hadassah and Karem is where a lot of them get sent too. Like
just because there's a lot of Arabic doctors and stuff.
No, there are also a lot of Arab doctors in Tel Aviv and in Haifa and in other places. But I just think that specifically is just it's a very advanced hospital.
Mm.
So I guess that's why. I'm not sure. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. So, let's continue.
Yeah.
Do you wanna introduce our guest?
Yes. So today we have Tanya here with us from
Hello.
Denmark. Hello. Yeah. Tanya is my wife also.
How'd you do it? Is it for the money?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course. Why else would I do it?
Exactly. Yeah.
She just really wanted an Israeli
passport. 2018. You don't actually need to love people anymore.
No, of course not. Who loves anyone?
Yeah.
In current year. So welcome, Tanya. Welcome to the podcast. It's nice to have you.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and then we'll let people know why we invited you here. I think you have interesting input.
Yeah, well, I am 26 from Denmark. I was born and raised in Copenhagen, which is the capital of Denmark for those who don't know, but I think most people would know that. And I study medicine. I'm in my last year and I'll be a doctor next summer. Yeah, and that's, I guess, a very, very quick intro.
You're basically a doctor.
I'm basically a doctor.
Yeah. A real doctor. Right?
A real one.
Where are you gonna? What kind of doctor are you going to be?
Eventually, I'll be a family doctor.
Family doctor.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's in many, many years. I still have to do a lot of basic training.
Why family medicine?
Family medicine... because I really want to help a lot of different people. And I think once you specialize in cardiology or any of these other very, very, very narrow specializations, you have a certain type of patient that you're working with. Mm-hmm. And in family medicine, you have old and young and men and women and, you know, there's something wrong with their heart. They have diabetes. They have a problem with their foot. There's a lot of different things. It's a very broad
spectrum.
You're basically the first line of defense.
First line of defense, yeah. So I like the idea of not really losing your knowledge about one thing just because you get really good at another thing. And I like the idea of working with the whole population, you know, also the ones that aren't so sick that they have to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then I like the idea of having a normal schedule, you know.
Yeah.
You go to work like everybody else and you come home like everybody else. You're not doing night shifts all the time and not seeing your kids. And like you come home the weekend, you're like, oh my God, my kid broke their leg. What happened? You know, you don't even know.
It's crazy how doctors work. I don't understand how they can do these like 36-hour shifts.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have 36-hour shifts in Denmark, but we still have long shifts.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have 18-hour shifts.
Still
That's
long.
The longest one you do.
Still very long.
It's very long. It's very long. Yeah.
So how a girl from Denmark married this guy?
Money, clearly. No.
No, I'm asking like how... Well, first of all, what are you doing here? What are you doing in Israel? Why did you come to Israel?
Well, currently I'm doing a semester abroad. I actually just finished my rotations. I was there for 12 weeks in pediatric surgery in the same hospital where Tom also studies. But how did I come to Israel? That was a complete chance encounter. I wanted to do a summer exchange program where you just do a month of rotations in a foreign hospital. And
a
we
month?
Have, yeah, a month.
1 month.
1 month.
Okay.
And we have an organization in Denmark called IMCC. It's a international organization. It's something like International Medical Something Cooperation. I'm not exactly sure what the last C is, but they work with other organizations around the world to exchange medical students. And just not just exchange, but, you know, international medical cooperation. And I applied there for bunch of countries. I think Israel was my eighth priority. I wanted to go to I wanted to go to South America really bad. So I ended up in Israel.
It's your eighth priority.
It was my eighth priority, yeah. Well,
it's more south than Denmark. I guess they thought it would fit, you know? It's like, it's
yeah, fucked up. Yeah. I mean, it's basically a lottery, and then they take your vote.
We were your eighth priority?
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
It's just, it's fucked up.
What, when people don't know it, like, where would they want to come? It's like, sad. What, you know, if they don't know anything, why would they want
to? No, I honestly, I didn't know the story, but I was sure you'll be like, it's the first time I'm hearing this, but I was sure it'd be like, I always wanted to come to Israel. It was always
no, I never wanted. I was like, okay, well, all these countries, I guess Israel should fit in there somewhere. But it's only because I didn't want to travel Europe because I'm European, so it's kind of boring for me. So Europe was all my last priority. Mm-hmm. So it was something like all of South America, Asia, Australia, then Israel, and then Europe.
Wow. Why did you want Israel in the first place? Did you think it would be like Doctors Without Borders or something where you go to?
No, it's just a fun experience. Like to go out of Europe, because the thing is, we have the European Union, so the medical treatment, the whole dogma of how you treat medical conditions in Europe is kind of streamlined. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would just not be the foreign experience if you went somewhere in Europe. So I wanted to go outside of Europe, and Israel's outside of Europe. So that's why you were on the list.
So you just chose all the distant, like, yeah, different places.
I figured I'd come help some people who didn't know how to, you know, wipe their butt or go to the toilet. No, I'm kidding.
How was like your first days here when you just landed?
Hot as hell. Yeah, I went here in the end of June, and the hottest 2 months in Israel, July and August. Yeah. So
what year?
It was in 2015 that I came here. So 3.5 years ago, it's the first time I came here. And we went off the plane, and I was like, I'm going to die. Because we went to Tel Aviv right away. And Tel Aviv is there. So Israel is, you know, the mountains, there's the desert, there's the beach. And when you go to the beach, it's the Mediterranean, and it's humid. Like, you won't believe. And Tel Aviv is bad. So we went to Tel Aviv and we were sweating and we were like, oh my God, what did we do? So it was very hot, the first impression. But I really liked it.
Was it like you imagined? Was it like
Well, the thing is that in Denmark, you don't really know anything about Israel at all. You know, Israel isn't on the radar when it comes to the news in Denmark. And you don't really, for the average Danish person, if it's not on the news, you don't really know about it because you don't have the time to sit down and study Israel. You know,
of course. It's
like if you study Middle East studies in the university, that's what something you're going to learn about. But if you're just an average Joe on the street, you don't really know anything about Israel.
Yeah.
Whenever Israel's in the news, it's always about the conflict.
Yeah.
So you don't know, you know, what's the nature like? What are the people like? I didn't even register in my mind that you speak Hebrew. It was so foreign to me. So when I came here, it wasn't like I imagined, because I imagined nothing, I think. You know, I was like, oh, is it desert? Is it trees? What is it even like? So I just came here and I was like, ah, palm trees. I guess that makes sense. And oh, there's some sand. And yeah, okay, this is Israel, I guess. You know, and so...
Was people around you scared or worried when you said you're going to Israel, since all you hear in the news is the conflict?
Yeah, that was definitely, I mean, my uncle and my aunt, they're a bit older, they're a bit like, I think my uncle was a educated butcher, that's his line of work. Mm-hmm. So they were, I guess, the most scared in my family. My mom was pretty cool with it, but she used to dive, so she's been in Israel before. She went to Eilat when she was younger to go diving.
It's a good diving site.
It's actually one of the best in the world.
Yeah, I've heard that it's.
Yep.
I mean, I don't dive with oxygen, so when I dive, it's like free diving. So I was just in the shallow waters when I was.
Yeah,
in Eilat,
I can't dive at all. Not even. I can barely put my head in the water because of ear.
Ah, you have an ear thing.
Ear issues.
Yeah.
But when I was in Thailand, I've been to Koh Tao, which is one of the bigger diving islands. And mm-hmm. There was a lot of Australian there, like diving instructor. And people would ask, where are you from? And I would say Israel. They say, oh, Eilat. And I was like, is it? How do you know Eilat? And it's like one of the best spots in the world. People come from all
apparently.
Over.
So yeah, I went. I was diving in the Great Barrier Reef in Australia. And then I came to dive and I was like, oh, okay, I guess, you know, Eilat was like number two on that list or something like that. So I came, I don't know if number two, but you know, was in the top 10. I went there. To be honest, compared to the Great Barrier Reef, it's not, I wouldn't say that it's like, wow, it blew my mind, but it's really cool.
Yeah,
really,
but the really Great cool. Barrier Reef is the top of the top. Yeah, you know, it's great. So beautiful. I also went to the Great Barrier Reef before I came to Eilat, so I was also like, oh, okay, I guess.
Yeah. You know. No, that's it's amazing. Yeah,
I don't know when I
but
was
it's
diving.
Nice. There's a lot of fish. There's a lot of dolphins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dolphins are cool. Yeah. When I was snorkeling in Koh Tao, so it's like snorkeling. It's not really diving, but you would see like you see what's under the water.
Yeah.
Right? And it seemed not. It seemed like it was very cool. One of the best spots, but it didn't like Eilat seems pretty cool next to it. Like yeah. They seem kind of similar. It didn't seem like it was way better there.
I always thought you don't dive because you're scared. I didn't think No, I'm kidding.
What am
I?
Pussy.
All right. Well, so how would you say that your... So you said you didn't really have an opinion about Israel before you came. Like, you didn't really know anything about
it.
Yeah, yeah. And how would you say that your opinion is now about it?
Wow. That's a broad question. I mean, my opinion is a ton of things. I love it here. I think Israel really struck a nerve with me. Like, I really felt like when you're in Denmark, it's a very polite country and everyone stands in line and people don't talk to each other in the supermarket or on the bus. You know, everyone's kind of doing their own thing. And Danish people are very warm once you get to know them, but they can be a bit sheltered. When you just see them on the street, you know, no one's really talking to each other unless they're friends. And here in Israel, it's like one big family, you know, my business is your business. You don't really sit on the bus without anyone saying something to you. You don't stand in line at the grocery store without someone coming up and talking to you. And especially someone who speaks English, because then they know you're from abroad. And then they want to know, why are you here? How do you like it? So... It struck a nerve because it's like a family thing, you know. It feels like you're in a big family here, for better and worse. But it's
how would you describe the worst?
Yeah, I was gonna ask.
Sometimes
that.
You want people to stop talking to you.
Just shut the fuck up.
Yeah, sometimes it's like that. But yeah, I guess I like that. That mentality of at least we're talking, even if we're fighting, you know, everyone kind of has an opinion on politics, on food, on the weather, on everything, you know, so it's always a discussion here. And sometimes you're like, okay, you know, this is my opinion, just leave me alone. But I like the whole, you know, we're always trying to debate things and always trying to find new solutions and new things to talk about. That's a thing here in Israel, that people are always talking, they're always debating things, they're always interacting with each other. And I like that.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's it.
You mentioned the polite thing.
Yeah,
which is something I struggle with here,
being people, polite.
What,
or the fact that people are not
the
polite.
Fact that people can be assholes sometimes. And it happens a lot on the road. It happens when you stand in line. It happens like almost every time I stand in line, I have to like
you have to
watch.
Keep your place.
Yeah, I have to keep my place. I have to stand
even against the old ladies. Like
yeah. Israelis, they always try to be better than you always try to be in front of the guy before you.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle with it sometimes. I'm wondering how. Well, is it something that when you go to... So you accept it like as part of the interaction thing and you
absolutely.
Like it? Or?
It's part of the culture. Well, I mean, do I like it? Obviously, I would like that people were a bit more... that they thought a little bit more about the person next to them before they act, mm-hmm. you know? And like you say, on the road and when you're standing in line, these are the places where you notice it very much.
Yes.
But it's... I think, you know, I've gotten used to it now. I just kind of deal with it, you know, when I stand in line.
When you go back to Denmark and you like stand in lines, you're like, this is better.
Yeah, you're more relaxed. But it's a cultural thing. Like if you don't teach your children how to, you know, okay, you don't do this now because that's going to hurt somebody else. Like you don't just push forward because what if the guy behind you really had to hurry and he actually really wanted to keep that spot in line. You know, you don't, if you don't teach your kids to think about that, they're not going to think about that.
Yeah.
So I think it's a cultural thing that, that there are just some things that you do here in Israel. And because everyone drives like an asshole, you kind of have to drive like an asshole to get anywhere or not get hit by other cars.
True.
So it's, you know, but I don't, I wouldn't say it's terrible, but it's definitely a cultural, a big cultural difference from Denmark, because in Denmark, people are very polite, almost too polite.
Would you say that there's something that, so let's say besides being the, a bit more polite and standing in line and things like that, would, is there anything that you see that is reversed that you wished Denmark would have from Israel? I can, I mean, I think both me and Daniel and about every sane Israeli I know would agree that people here need to be a bit more polite, you know, in line, on the road, when they drive. But is there something that you would say, ah, I wish Denmark would have that?
Absolutely, yeah. I, as I mentioned, the family thing, the interaction thing. I hate that, you know, you can stand in an elevator with 20 people and no one is talking to each other. It's so weird. It's like we're 5.5 million people in Denmark and we don't talk. It, like, we're a very small country and no one really interacts, you know? Everyone's doing their own
thing.
5.5 million,
really?
We're not a lot of people. Maybe it's 5'8". It's less than 6.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you always think about Israel as a small country, but Israel's almost 9 million people.
Yeah, you are breeding like crazy.
Yeah, man.
Like rabbits.
Yeah. We like sex. I mean,
the Jews.
The Jews.
Yeah. It's a known thing about us.
Yeah. No, but I mean, the interaction thing I wish was a thing in Denmark. And I've talked to a lot of my friends who are also like me. They have a little bit more of an extroverted personality. They like the bit of a southern culture more, and they say the same thing. You know, I have a friend who's half Romanian, half Spanish, and he did what I'm doing now. He did that in Barcelona, and he also came back with that urge to talk to people on the street. And I don't know, if someone's saying something funny, you reply to them even though you're not part of the conversation because you're interacting. So I think
I'm wondering why is the southern countries are more like people are more friendly in southern countries. Maybe it's because it's hotter. So because it's a real thing.
It is a real thing.
The geography and the climate, they influenced the culture so much. So the culture in Spain, for example, is they're friendly and they talk to each other, right? And in Denmark, it's a culture thing. They don't. But I feel like the cultural thing is influenced by the geography of the country, right?
It might be. I'll say that when I was in Denmark, it's other people are not friendly. They're actually one of the nicest people.
Once you know them.
Yeah. They're one of the nicest people I've met once you get to know them. Until it's so weird to me sometimes that people, like, as Tanya said, that, you know, they don't really talk to each other in the street, you know what I mean, or in the on the bus or something. Like, the buses there are quite quiet, you know.
Bus in Israel, you hear the lady shouting on the phone, you hear the motor of the bus, you hear the radio,
and there's always that 13-year-old kid who thinks he's so cool playing his music on speakers in the back of the bus.
Like a soundtrack.
Use headphones, man. But it's like a soundtrack.
They want to be like, this is the soundtrack to my life. Like Kanye West is with me, playing when I'm walking in the street.
Kanye,
supporting
this
drum.
This is the soundtrack of my life.
And would you say, what is your favorite thing about Israel?
It's so difficult to pinpoint one thing because Israel has so many facets. Israel is such a, I'm going to use an SJW word now, but it's such a multicultural country because
we're so diverse.
Yeah. Diversity.
It's amazing.
Oh my God. But there are so many cultures here because Jews came from all over the world. A lot of people have this idea that Jews only came from Europe. I think you talked about that on the last podcast also. Yeah. But it's literally like Yemenite. There are Asian people here. There are African people here. There are Americans. There are Europeans. They're all over the Middle East. And all those cultures came together. So obviously it's really difficult to pinpoint one thing because the country has so many sides. It's like a diamond. You can't ever find the thing. Like, oh, I like this corner the best.
Not your favorite.
I'll give you a few things. Like, I really like, and now I'm I don't want to repeat myself too much, but the interaction thing. I like the people here.
Yeah.
I love the weather. I love the food. you know, in Denmark we have 9 months of winter. Here you guys have 9 months of summer. And I like the sun. Plus. I like, you know, going outside in a dress instead of, you know, like four pairs of pants and giant jacket.
And a giant bear on top of the jacket to keep you warm.
Like a bear. A bear we skin. Just walk around with bears in Denmark. Bear That's skin. What we do, yeah.
It's like people think that Israeli people ride camels everywhere, like
which you do.
So you ride, So mine is in the garage right now.
Yeah,
Mine is getting its toes fixed.
Yeah.
Actually, I had some friends that were working in the Dutch embassy in Israel, and then. One of them told me that her friends asked her if she needs to walk around with a helmet here. Because it's dangerous.
From the rockets?
Yeah. Oh, or like the fighting in the streets.
They probably see
The fighting in the streets.
Yeah, they see the reporters on television, right? In the center of Gaza or something.
Yeah.
That they have this helmet and they feel like... Also, a helmet wouldn't really help you.
No. Yeah, I mean, if a bomb is going to fall on your face, the helmet's not going to...
If a bomb's going to fall on your face.
Well, I had this helmet on. Yeah. Good thing I had it.
It's not like falling on your bike. It's not not the equivalent of that.
No, not really.
No.
Yeah,
but there are a ton of things that I love about Israel. And I would say if there's one thing that I would elevate over everything else, it's not really the weather or the food, it's the people.
People
here. I mean, Israelis are special. And I don't know if it's the history of the Jewish people. Obviously, not all Israelis are Jewish, but it is the vast majority of people here that are Jewish.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the history that created this fighter mentality, or it's the conflict in the region. I don't know, but the Israeli people, they have this strong fighter mentality.
First of all, where there's a strong sense of community, right?
Yeah.
With the Jewish people.
Definitely.
Because it's something we had to develop over the years, because we were never, or for a long time, we weren't together. We were all over.
Yeah.
But you'd see people in Morocco, practicing Jewish or celebrating Jewish holidays, and people in Denmark, I don't know, Jewish people in Denmark celebrated Jewish.
Yeah.
So there was always, even if we were far apart, there was always the sense of community, because we have... certain values and cultural things and religious thing that we have from a long time ago, and we kept it wherever we went. So
so
there's a strong sense of Jewish community. So I think that's part of the family thing you mentioned.
Yeah.
And the fighter mentality, I don't think it has to do anything. Well, first of all, you know, like there's the Jewish mother, my son is going to be a doctor thing, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe Jewish people...
And if not a doctor, then a lawyer. And if not a lawyer, then an engineer. And if not an engineer, then he should probably be all three things, because I'm going to be happy with him.
Yeah, and if you're not going to be those, I'm going to kill myself. So there's like the Jewish mother mentality thing. So I don't know, maybe Jewish people want to achieve more. But I think that, well, I feel like the fighter mentality you mentioned is because Israel is a new country.
Yeah.
So nothing is obvious. Nothing is granted, right? So
you're not
like born. Well, we were born into a country who's ready, right? Sort of.
Yeah.
But, I mean, our grandparents, they when they were born, there was no Israel. They had to build it.
Yeah,
they had
to
build from the bottom. So I think that...
No, and I would say also in our generation, like the... Look, I mean, when me and you were born, we were born actually pretty close to each other. But in the 90s, in Israel, I think the GDP was like $12,000 or something like that.
I don't know.
And now it's around $44,000. You know, it's a huge difference. And I feel like I would say that there is something about this fighter mentality, like from conversations that me and Tanya had before, where she said that she really sees, like, people here are constantly thinking about how to improve things, how to be more engaged, how to affect the political system, how to change the company that they're working in, how to create the new startup and things like that. And I wouldn't say it's only in Israel, but it's quite unique to Israel, all of these things working together.
Yeah.
You know which country I think is similar? Singapore. Since they were, I was there a long time ago, 2006.
I remember, in 10th grade.
Yep. But since they are pretty much a new country as well, and they're very... they have a strong, they want to achieve great things, and they also take inspiration from Israel, kind of, yeah, from what they told
They're
me.
Also very small.
They're also a very small country, right? So they feel like because, well, we're a new country, nothing is granted, we have to build, then you have a sense of you want to succeed, you want to do good, you want to do great things and help, I don't know, just help not only the country, but help yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be the best you can.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. I think people in, well, I would say Europe, but it's huge generalization.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Let's say people in developed countries.
Yeah, first
they
world
are,
countries.
Let's say, well, they're not hungry, right?
Yeah.
They are, they have a good, not that we have a bad life, but what I'm saying is they're not hungry. They're born into a country who's ready, everything's fine, everything's in place, everything's working. And well, they just
they're lazy.
Do you agree?
Yeah, they're lazy.
I don't
no,
know
it's
if lazy.
No, but not lazy in the sense that they don't want to work, but they're lazy in their creative ability to think about the future of the country. For example, in Denmark, like if you look at the political spectrum in Denmark, it's obviously there's a right and a left wing, but everyone is socialist. There's not a non-socialist party in Denmark. No one is talking about privatizing healthcare, right? The political spectrum in Israel is very, very wide. Like, people are talking all the way from Bernie Sanders' crazy socialism to let's evict all the Palestinians and take this land for ourselves and have religious law. Like, there is a very, very broad political spectrum because people are constantly thinking out of the box. They're thinking, we could do the country this way, we can do the country this that way. The fact that Denmark has been working, just, you know, mowing along for so long, people get lazy in their way of thinking about the country.
Yeah.
And they're not like, oh, we could also do it this way. We could.
There's no
Everyone's
need.
Kind of like, well, I guess it's working. You
yeah,
know, let's
no
just
need
kind of
improve.
Keep going.
Yeah.
And that mentality is.
But wouldn't you say that Denmark has not
lazy.
Just been like kind of working? It's been working actually quite well. Until I think a few years ago, Denmark was number one in almost every single.
Yeah, but
measurement of OECD countries.
Yeah, but why are they working well? If you took Denmark and you put it here, would they still be working well? Of course not.
Yeah,
you
probably.
Know, Denmark is working well because we're surrounded by countries who are almost exactly like us and who don't want to hurt us, right? We didn't work very well when we were occupied by Germany in the Second World War.
The Germans.
Right? Like, we just gave up. That's not a country that's working well if we can't defend ourselves.
Hold on, you're saying
you
just gave up?
We laid down arms and we let the Germans invade us.
But wasn't there like a
there
Danish
was a tiny
resistance?
There was a Danish resistance, but a country that's based on small resistance group. The thing is, like, the resistance didn't free Denmark. They just kind of sabotaged the German occupation a little bit, but they didn't free Denmark.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
and I think when you talk about a country, its sovereignty, how well it works, it needs to work in all situations. You know, I don't think that it needs to work only when all the people are white and only when all the people are socialist and only when no one is trying to invade you. You know, like, it, the structure of a country, the system that the country is working under needs to work also in adversity, also in war times, also when there are a lot of immigrants coming in. And if it's not working, then I think you can surmise that that country wasn't really ever working.
So you feel Denmark is working now because it's easy for them?
Yeah, that's what I feel. Because the thing is, Denmark, for example, we don't really have an army. So if Russia were to invade, I don't know if anyone other than Europeans or Northern Europeans know this, but Sweden just made it mandatory, I think about a year ago, that everyone goes to the army again because they're very scared that Russia is going to invade them.
Wow.
And the thing is, if Russia tries to invade Scandinavia, which is, I wouldn't say it's likely, but that would be a political strong move for them because they would get to control the waterway out to the Atlantic Ocean, which is a very strategically great thing to do.
Yeah.
We can't do anything. We can't do anything. We have no army. We have no protection. We have NATO, but the only reason NATO is working is because of America, And I don't see America going to war against the only other superpower in the world over Denmark.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
they're not going to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest.
So,
it's a bit
so
like,
I think, you know, you can say that Denmark is working because we're all not, we're not trying to fight anybody. And, you know, everyone's kind of okay with paying a lot of taxes. But even if you took all the Danish people and replaced them with the French, Denmark would stop working because the French just made massive riots in Paris because of the carbon tax, right?
Yeah.
We have we have crazy taxes in Denmark. That would never work with the French mentality. So I wouldn't say that Denmark is necessarily working very well. It's surviving because everyone in Denmark is like, let's not make any problems. Let's just kind of be quiet. We'll vote for the same party that we're always voting for.
So you don't
nothing's
going
to change.
It does never protest there.
We don't have violent protests, really. Like, we have protests where students who get paid crazy amounts of money in scholarships, they're protesting because they want to lower the scholarships because we can't afford to pay scholarships.
Wait, students are protesting against?
No. The government in Denmark gives a scholarship. So, like, something to help you
live. I know what a scholarship
every
is.
Month. But it's basically like a paycheck from the government, and then the government sometimes they say like, oh, listen, we can't afford to support someone who did a degree in literature, philosophy, and Greek history, and has been in university for 9 years, but hasn't actually produced anything. So they want to lower it.
Well, they can't afford to do that for anybody. The thing is, Denmark is a very, very expensive country to run because we're very socialist. So everything is basically paid for by the government. And that will be your you know, taxes. And we're just not making enough money to pay for all these things. So the government's constantly trying to figure out ways to pay less. You know, so they're talking about, oh, maybe we'll take a little bit of money out of this and maybe we'll take a bit of money out of that. So whenever there's protests, it's because of that. You know, they're trying to lower the funding for some type of social structure. Mm-hmm. Be it free educations, like they actually just closed, I think it was 2 years ago, they closed a bunch of different educations in the University of Copenhagen. You could be, and like, hold on, an Eskimologist.
And as a what?
An Eskimologist. Yeah, that was a thing in the University of Copenhagen.
Study Eskimos?
Yeah. And
like the dudes in the north with the eagles?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they have a fascinating lifestyle, but
this was a publicly funded education. Like, my taxpayer dollars, it's not what we use in Denmark, we use krona, but my taxpayer dollars, to use an American phrase, went to paying for someone to get an education in Eskimology. It was ridiculous. And we had a bunch of these, you know, like, I think we educate about 30 priests a year, and we don't need
priests,
right?
It's isn't ridiculous. That important? I don't know. For like
30 a year, I doubt it.
Is like, it a lot? 30?
30 a year for a country of 5.5 million people, where most people are secular? Absolutely, that's a ridiculous amount of priests, right? So, the Danish society is really expensive because there are a lot of these things that are remnants from back when we started socialism and we were more into Eskimology, I guess. And now they're realizing, like, oh, okay, people are having less and less kids. There are less and less people paying taxes. We can't afford these things. We have to close it. So people get angry because they're like, they look at their tax sheet and that didn't get any smaller. They're still paying the same amount of tax, but they're getting less and less.
So I understand the subtext of what you're saying, that you don't agree with this
policy. Not socialist at all, but...
Are you a minority in Denmark?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like I told you, you know, the political spectrum spans from left to right, but it's left to right inside of socialism.
Yeah.
You know, even the Liberal Party in Denmark, they're still socialist. They're more capitalist in the way that they look at companies. So they want to... They want companies to be able to fare well in Denmark, but they understand that they can't campaign on privatizing healthcare because that's kind of such a foreign idea for Danish people that people will be like, what are you crazy?
Yeah.
You know, no one would ever vote for a party like that.
I have a question. So let's say when Sweden says, okay, we're going to start re-enlisting people into the army.
Yeah.
aren't there no politicians in Denmark that are saying, hey, you know, if they're doing it, maybe we should start doing something about this?
In Denmark, that didn't happen. Mm. No. I think Sweden and Denmark, even though we are very close geographically and also obviously politically, and they're just across the water from Copenhagen, you can see Sweden from Copenhagen.
Yeah.
They have a very different way of dealing with their society. Mm-hmm. They're much more pro-social justice. They're much more politically correct.
Okay.
But they're also, they're much more afraid of Russia. I think maybe Denmark, I don't really know, because the politicians haven't had this conversation publicly about what we're going to do with our army. But I think maybe they just realized that regardless of whether we enlist all the men of fighting age, we're still not going to have a chance against Russia.
Yeah.
So probably. I think they just realized it's not worth it to spend so much money enlisting such a big part of the country, because it is going to be money, and that money we're going to have to take from somewhere else when we don't, we can't use the army anyway, because if they want to invade us, they're still going to do it.
Are there voices in Denmark expressing a different opinion?
About the army specifically?
No, about socialism, about the left, about
absolutely. I mean, you see this, I think that you see it play out very much in America with the social justice. You have Bernie Sanders, you have that crazy woman Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, who became the mayor of New York. She became the senator of New York. She was elected in some New York election, and she crazy socialist, right? And then you have the social justice warriors, and then you have the counterculture of the right, and you have that happening in Denmark as well. Mm-hmm. So whenever there's something being talked about in America, like socialism versus capitalism, we talk about it in Denmark as well, and people are waking up to a bit more of a non-socialist way of doing things. Mm-hmm. So there are people voicing opinions that they want more of a libertarian approach to government. You know, government should have less power in Denmark. And even our conservative party, they're talking about flat tax now, which we don't have in Denmark, which is also a bit more of a capitalist idea. It's a bit more of a libertarian idea. So there are voices, but from a country where most people are socialists in their mentality, that's a very, very far step. Like, it's a big, big jump to go from socialism to capitalism. And it's also, it's a big change. Like, there's no way you're going to go from socialism to capitalism without, for a while, lowering your quality of life. Mm-hmm. That's the way that change happens. And I think that people are not mentally ready for that. So, you know, there are voices. There are certain politicians who are talking about it. There are certain blogs, but it's far from being anything that's going to be.
What about that comedian, Jonathan Spang?
No, but I don't think he's actually. He's a comedian who does a talk show on our one of our publicly funded media channels. He does a weekly breakdown of the culture and the news, but with a very sarcastic, very critical.
Yeah, I've seen some of his stuff with like English
subtitles.
He's funny.
He's really good, but I don't think he doesn't criticize socialism.
No, but
criticizes
little things. What does he criticize?
Like this politician who said that, and that was very hypocritical because last year he said this, and he criticizes that bank because they were caught in a money laundering scam. But he doesn't actually say, oh, let's all be capitalists. That's not how far he goes. Because I think that mentality is hard to sell in a country like Denmark. It's a slow process.
I'm wondering about how is... So now that you've been here for 3.5 years now, right?
Well, I haven't been here for 3.5 years, but I've been in and out of Israel for 3.5 years. Yeah.
So when you go back to Denmark, what are people... like, what's the... How are people? What's the opinion of people really about Israel? And do you tell them, like, do you tell them new stuff they didn't know? Or
yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I told you, the opinion of Danish people is made by what they hear on the news, you know. And Israel is hardly ever on the news. Only when you know, during the war, last war in Gaza, you were on the news. During the opening of the U.S. embassy. there were a lot of news because that's also when the riots in Gaza started.
Yeah. It's not when it started, but yeah, it intensified very much
right around that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're on the news very infrequently and only about the Israel-Palestine conflict. It's never about like, oh, Bibi was charged in whatever, you know, that's not a thing in Denmark. We don't care about that.
Of course.
Yeah. People in Denmark, yeah, there is an opinion. Because when you are on the news, when Israel's on the news, it's always Israel bombed Gazans. Terrible, you know. So there is an opinion. There's a very anti-Israeli opinion. There's also a pro-Israeli opinion because there are, like, Danish people travel a lot. So a lot of people that come here and see the country, see the truth, see the conflict, talk to Palestinians, talk to Israelis, they understand that there's a lot more to it than what you think. So there are pro-Israelis and there are a lot of pro-Palestinians. We also have a massive Muslim community, especially in the big cities in Denmark. And there is a thing in the Arab world that everyone in the Arab world, not everyone obviously, but a lot of people in the Arab world, they hate Israel and they bring that with them, obviously.
Are they immigrants?
Yeah, well, generations of immigrants. Some of them are first generation, some of them are third, fourth, fifth generation. But it comes from the family, you know. If mom and dad talks about how terrible Israel is, you're going to talk about that.
What I'm trying to ask, are those like Syrian immigrants?
Syrian, they're Pakistani, they're Iranian,
not all recently from the war in Syria.
No, I mean, there is a big Syrian immigrant community, but there was a giant Iranian, there's a big Iranian community also because they came after the Iranian Revolution. They're usually the ones that have several degrees. Several generations behind them.
I didn't know that. They're Pakistani
immigrants. Also, there are a lot of Middle Eastern.
The recent immigration waves into Europe, you know, like whether they are refugees or work immigrants or whatever, people, you know, from Syria actually fleeing their lives, people from, you know, somewhere in sub-Saharan Africa saying, oh, I can get a great job in Germany or something. Would you say that influenced people's opinion about Israel-Palestine? Because I notice with a lot of Germans or Eastern Europeans that I speak with, or Italians, that ever since these immigration waves started and the terrorist attacks in Europe, all of a sudden it's a lot easier to explain Israel's position.
Well, yeah, I get where you're coming from. So basically, what happens when you have a large Muslim community in Copenhagen, and if the way that they feel about Israel is that Israel's a terrible country, and you know, you become like ethnically Danish people become friends with these kids because they go to school together. And if they ever talk about this, they kind of just adopt the opinion of their friends. And that definitely slowly started changing after the big immigration wave, because what the big immigration wave into Europe did is that it shifted a lot of opinion right. So people became a lot more nationalist. They became a lot more isolationist after the giant immigration wave, because they saw that these giant culture clashes, when they happen too quickly and when it's too big of a group, it will fail. Because a country that's as Western as, for example, Germany, that accepts, I think it was like 1.2 million immigrants they accepted so far. That's a massive part of their population comes from cultures that are radically different. I mean, radically different. And it's not necessarily Muslim, because it's also African Christians. Yeah, but it's just that the culture is so different that there will be these massive clashes, because you believe this about the role of women in society and we believe this. And, you know, you can't.
So do you see something changing in
I mean,
Denmark?
People are becoming more right-wing, and with that right-wing change is also the, maybe Israel does have something to say here. Mm-hmm. But that's more, I think, of the anti-Muslim sentiment. Like, people become a bit anti-Muslim, and then they're like, well, F all the Muslims, and Palestinians are Muslims, so that... I feel they become a bit more soft on Israel because they hate their enemies a bit more.
I don't necessarily think
that it's because they educate themselves better. Mm. I think it's more of a reactionary way of thinking. Because people, aren't very educated about these things. You know, they're not on the news, and people don't
go read. Can you expect them to be, honestly? Like, I don't
know. I mean, like, if it was Sweden, I would expect them to be educated because it's their neighboring country. But it's Israel. It's a tiny country in the Middle East. It
doesn't affect their lives. They have their work.
It's really far away.
Yeah. You know. So that's why I'm saying it's more of a reactionary thing, because what really affects them is the Muslim immigration. So they become anti-Muslim. Yeah. And then they're like, Palestinians are Muslims. Mm-hmm. F the Muslims. That's what I think it did, but it did change the spectrum of opinion a little bit.
Yeah. All right. So okay.
That's but regarding what you said, like, do I tell people new things? Obviously, like, a lot of people don't know it here, and I also tell people non-political things.
Of course.
Like, I love talking about Israel. We went there, and this is beautiful, and you should come. And I send my friends photos of the food, and I try to make them come
life.
Here.
That's our life eventually, right? Yeah. We don't like sit around thinking about politics or war.
Like, you don't sit and stare at the border of Gaza every day and you're like, oh my God, I guess what's going to happen today? You live your life.
Yeah,
here,
we have
you
our
know?
Life.
You go There's out, a... you go for drinks, you have your friends, you go hiking, you go traveling. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tell people about Israel.
Where's your favorite place to hike?
Up north.
Up north?
For sure. Yeah, I think because I'm from Denmark and we have, in Northern Europe, we have this great nature. We have rivers and we have big lakes and big forests and tall trees. And we don't have mountains in Denmark, but in Norway, they have a lot of mountains. And so the north is what reminds me a bit of that, you know, with the mountains and the somewhat resemblance of forests and... You know, I'm not too crazy about the desert. I think it's very different, and it's
because actually
it looks
a lot of the Europeans I met, especially the Germans. I'm not sure what, but Germans, they come here and they're like, the desert is amazing.
I
it's
love
so
the desert.
Beautiful. It's so silent. I'm like, it's not silent. It's dead. There's nothing
I love the desert. It's my
favorite
part.
It's a thing.
Part.
It's
really?
A thing in Israel. It's either you love it or you hate it.
I love the desert.
Yeah. There is no the desert. I guess it's okay. It's either it sucks, or it's like, wow, it's my favorite thing ever.
I think it's beautiful. I think it's a beautiful area, and I think it's like so peaceful, and it's like, it's, I don't know.
I need some trees.
Yeah.
I need some vegetation, some animals.
I need some,
some sound.
Yeah.
Some
exactly.
water.
Tanya.
Something. Yeah.
Are you going to stay with us here, or are you leaving us?
Well, I'm leaving you for a while, but I'm coming back.
You're coming back? And do you see your future here?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think when you're a couple across nationalities... you're gonna have to choose, and it's either you choose one of the other's country or you choose a third country.
Yeah.
And I think me and Tom, we love our countries too much to choose a third one. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm looking at the greater sum of happiness, where we're gonna create the greater sum of happiness, both for the two of us, but also for our future kids. And I think that would be hands down Israel. You know, they will feel a bit Jewish because they're going to have a Jewish dad. Hopefully at some point also a Jewish mom. But we'll see if I manage that conversion.
That's heavy.
Yeah, it's a long process. But I think that they're gonna feel that this is their family and this is their homeland. And that's what I want for them and my husband.
Nice. Well, we love you too. And thank you for
especially
coming.
I love
you.
Especially me.
Yeah, thank you.
It was a great pleasure.
Yeah.
It was really a pleasure.
It was good coffee, too.
We'll have you again, for sure.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to it.
100%.
Thank you very much for listening.
Yalla.
Have a great week.
Bye, guys. Shabbat shalom.
Bye. Bye.